This is KCPX, public radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. It's December, and it's fruitcake weather. In 1956, novelist, short story writer, screenwriter, playwright, and actor Truman Capote published his short story, A Christmas Memory, in Mademoiselle magazine.
It's always the same. A morning arrives in November, and my friend, as though officially inaugurating the Christmas time of year that exhilarates her imagination and fuels the blaze of her heart, announces, "It's fruitcake weather. Fetch our buggy. Help me find my hat."
The autobiographical story is set in the 1930s when the 7-year-old Capote and his elderly distant cousin and best friend embark on the annual task of gathering the ingredients and baking fruitcake. Cal Poly Professor Emeritus Krissa Hewitt has a similar annual tradition. She graciously allowed the Playing with Food crew into her kitchen to share the experience with her and her college hallmate, Nancy. This is how it went.
I'm Krissa Hewitt. I am a faculty emeritus from Cal Poly Art and Design Department, where I taught jewelry design, sculpture, three-dimensional design, a few other things tagged along for 31 years. I'm about to start making fruitcake, which I think my mom and I started it in 1960.
You're getting ready for Christmas.
Correct. Its history is that my mom was sent a fruitcake one year with the usual expectation of, what do I want to eat this for? It's fruitcake.
You found it in the cupboard five years later.
And she decided, this is pretty darn good. And it was sent by a family member, and her father's family came from Chillicothe, Ohio. And so there was a woman in that town who started making fruitcake and selling it and getting a livelihood off of it. My mom thought it was good enough, and she wrote back to the relative and said, "Is there any chance that this woman would share the recipe? I live a couple thousand miles away. I'm not going to be making it as a living." So the woman did. And it was a handwritten note, which may still be around here someplace. So that's where we started. And this is my copy, not the original.
Oh, wow.
So this makes now 14 of the commercial regular loaf pan, not the little tiny gift ones.
So we've got a lot of raisins.
Yes.
both regular and white raisins. Dates, cherries, pineapple, citron, orange peel, lemon peel, pecans, almonds, and flour.
This year I treated myself to ordering online. I thought, I don't need to drive to 5 markets to find nothing.
Okay, well, let's get started and tell me what you want me to do.
Okay. What I have done, because the recipe told us to do this, is that all the fruit has been cut up and allowed to sit for a while together with a little flour on it. It's in a pan over there.
Oh, wow. But it's not soaking in alcohol.
No. Recipe calls for 1 glass of brandy. No description
for
of size.
For 14 cakes, it's only 1 glass of brandy?
Part of the thing about fruitcakes is most people need to soak them in something to make them taste good. This one actually tastes really good. I'm not a heavy drinker, so when everybody talks about, I just keep soaking this, and I'm going, just taste it once. Without all of that. Okay, so 1 pound of butter.
Okay, with your nifty little butter cutter.
Well, it's just to make the beating a little easier. Okay, you can start emptying brown sugar if you want.
Okay, is it the whole thing?
Yeah, that one and this one.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
This is a really big bowl.
This is a really big bowl. My sister found this bowl someplace years ago, so it's been great. It doesn't get used a lot. If I had a major salad course some meal, that would be perfect.
How fluffed do you want this?
We're just beginning.
Oh, you're adding more stuff in.
Okay, I think you can turn that off for now and we'll get the eggs going.
So is this a special brandy?
No.
It's a big bottle of brandy.
I'm using this glass because it's one that Mom used to drink bourbon out of all the time. So.
A whole glass?
That's good.
Okay.
Perfect. conveniently, this is the amount we need.
Of molasses?
Mm-hmm. Which is a whole jar of...
It is convenient when it comes in. You just have to rip open the packages and
right.
not measure anything. So, this recipe makes 14 cakes. Do you just really enjoy it, or do you inflict it on your loved ones?
Fortunately, I've learned people that really love it. And I have some here, actually, one that didn't get used last year that's in very good shape, so you can taste it.
There we go. Oh, wow, it's wrapped in gold and everything.
I wrap it in cheesecloth that I've soaked in brandy and then in foil.
So this was made a year ago.
Correct.
Do you always do it the Sunday after Thanksgiving?
That became kind of the tradition, especially when I was away at school. But I think even before that, because it meant I was there and other people were around, as opposed to Mom just getting stuck doing it.
Okay, let me take a taste of it. Not bad.
You sound surprised.
Well, you know, I went to high school in the Midwest, around all of these German families. You know, you would get fruitcake upon fruitcake upon fruitcake. And it was all really sickeningly sweet. This is very moist, and the commercial ones were not moist at all.
That's why they got all the reputation of being a doorstop or a brick
exactly.
or, you know, whatever.
But this is good. I ate a whole slice.
Okay, what's the status on the eggs, Nancy?
The eggs are ready to do whatever.
All right, well, bring the yolks over here. Beat them up a little bit.
Okay.
Are we beating egg whites?
Yes.
Now or later?
Now's fine.
Is this all the dried spices?
Mm-hmm.
The smell of Christmas right there?
Exactly. One year I got this all ready to go and set it aside and then forgot to put it in. It was different. It wasn't bad, but it was different. Okay, so all of that goes in the big bowl.
In goes the buttermilk.
In goes the buttermilk. We did the brandy already. So the laborious part of this is cutting up the fruit.
Okay.
Cutting up dates, getting the pits out. You just become sticky, it feels like, all the way up to your elbow.
And I missed that activity.
Yeah, because it was done the day before.
Okay. How's that for right now?
That looks great. Okay.
Some nice fluffy egg whites. You said you taught art and design for 31 years at Cal Poly.
Yes.
How did you discover Cal Poly?
Fortunately, it was the job that accepted me.
Okay.
I grew up in Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley, but most of my travels actually took me to the East Coast where my father was born, and he moved to California, but we always went back to see his family. So going to San Francisco or Santa Barbara or regular trips like that didn't happen very often. I still remember when I came for my interview going, this ain't bad. It happened to be April, so the hills were green, and, you know, I was in Michigan at the time going to graduate school. So I sent out resumes to probably about 200 schools just because, you know, most of them didn't have jobs, but this one did, and it was one of the few that was a full-time tenure-track position as opposed to a sabbatical. I think teaching was kind of always a part of what I realized I was going to do. Making art and trying to sell it and make a living is damn hard work, and fortunately I like teaching, so it wasn't a bad thing to be doing as a substitute to that. The other joy of that has always been that I can take on commissions, which I do, but I am not beholden to the current trends in terms of trying to make stuff that will sell.
Teaching art and design for 31 years, what changed in your approach?
Actually, one of the interesting things that was changing was watching how the students were less and less and less familiar with their physical environment and how to manipulate it. They didn't know how to use tools. They, you know, it was like everything was kind of foreign, and that was an interesting shift. It made me very concerned about, you know, what's going on. I had to take a lot more time trying to explain how to use a hammer, how to use a file. Okay, gets dumped in here.
Okay, I'll lift the bowl and you can scrape. Well, I don't know if I want to lift the bowl because I don't want to be responsible for breaking it.
Yeah, you can rest it on the pan.
Okay. It's like a lava flow.
Yes. Getting the smell of the molasses and a little bit of the brandy. Now the joy. This is a nice one of the flat ice cream scoops. If I tried to use a spoon, I'd be kind of too far out of the action and wouldn't work very well. It's just a matter of trying to get it well mixed. And this pan is also special in that it is the liner from one of the old, I think it was a Hamilton Beach portable little oven that my mom would roast a ham in or whatever. One Thanksgiving or Christmas, somehow in the cleanup, the electrical cord got dispatched to someplace unknown. Unfortunately, she was smart enough to save the liner, which we had already started using as the mixing pan, and it would be really hard without it because it's 7 inches, 8 inches deep, and if you were trying to do this as I did once in like a lobster kettle or something, it's very hard to get to the bottom. So I really appreciate this pan. I'm very much a process person. I really like the doing of things. So whether it's cooking, especially in baking, I often see my mother's hands at the end of my arm, peeling an apple or whatever. What I started learning initially from her was baking. And baking, you have to be systematic. You can't just start at the far end and work backwards. And you can't very well in jewelry and metal either. You have to be able to plan the steps, or at least know that there are steps. And my hunch is that finding metal as a discipline may have had some similarity. I've always enjoyed just doing things physically that way. So when the piece is done, when the fruitcake is done, it's nice to eat it, but it was more fun making it. Okay, so now we're going to alternate 6 cups of flour and a dozen egg whites. I don't know when I was conscious of visualizing necessarily. My father loved to make things to teach himself how to do things. Unfortunately, he died when I was 8, so I didn't get anywhere near enough of that. But I got enough to say, this is fun. And the other great thing was, is that, you know, as a 6 and 7, 8-year-old, I wasn't somebody that he would say, run along, kid, I'm busy. I could always be right there underfoot. And I remember he was tooling some leather. And so then I got to hold the tool while he would maybe hit or something. And then eventually he was helping me learn how to do that. My parents had a swimming pool built. And he came home from work one day and he handed each of us a very simple sailboat kit. So we put those together and they sort of worked. Tended to fall over in the water with the sail, but the idea was good. But I asked him one day, I said, can we do another boat? Can I do something a little bit more than what we did before? And so it's like, fine. So we went off to the hobby store, and I remembered that he was so frustrated because the only models that were there that were at all appropriate for a 7 or 8-year-old were plastic already. This was in 1955, 56. So he just went over to the balsa wood area and got chunks of that and then took them home, taught me how to shape the hull of a boat all from scratch.
So he, in a few short 8 years, he was able to impart the rest of your life onto you.
Yes. As I say, he always enjoyed creating. He always enjoyed teaching himself how to do things, much more inquisitive than I think I have ever been. So that impression was left, and also just the, you know, certainly his presence after death in terms of just memories and everything else was there as an inspiration.
What's it like trying to teach people to have a vision of what they want to build? I'd imagine that'd be kind of difficult because you don't know what's in their head.
Correct.
And they don't know what's in your head. And you're like, build this magnificent piece of sculpture.
In the jewelry classes, I had some initial exercises that taught them something about how to cut the metal, how to file it, how to bend it, so that maybe that could stimulate some sense of where they could go with it. And then their first project, everyone was making a ring or a necklace. It was their pattern or their idea. And my requirement was is that I have a consultation with each of them individually about what they were trying to make, so that they would bring a drawing. And a big part of that was is that metal is not very forgiving in some ways, and if you have no idea what it can do, you're either going to design totally inappropriately or get yourself really caught. At that stage, I could help them figure out, if you change this just a little bit, life will get a whole lot easier, or whatever it might be. But mostly, I think it was just trying to give enough structure so that they weren't just totally, I have no idea what to do, and at the same time enough freedom so that they were, if there were 24 students, there were 24 different rings. We've done a really good job in this culture, I think, of making art feel like it's something that belongs only to a few. Born with the gene or you're not is the concept, which I personally think is hogwash, and so it's just trying to get people beyond that.
Well, it's getting thicker, definitely. Have you ever made two batches?
Yes. In fact, this batch is going to Sandy Sigurdsson, who several years ago got so excited about this cake. So she comes and cuts up fruit with me. Would have been here today, but couldn't fit it into her schedule. This one she will have, and then I'll do another one that'll be mine. This is more energy than I've expended in a long time. I'm standing here perspiring. God, that batch is good. You want to try mixing?
No. I think you're doing a good job.
Don't want to take the fun away.
Do you think in all those years of teaching, you changed as an artist?
I hope so. I think probably mostly in terms of just broadening my sense of exploration of shapes and forms, and not quite sure what started it, but got very interested in kind of natural textures and age of things. So that didn't always come out in the pieces per se, but I did find myself putting more textural forms into pieces of jewelry and other things, whereas, you know, kind of started out as polished metal.
Do you think you learned from any of your students?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think not only learning things, but learning how to try to communicate, how to inspire, and I don't have any easy answers for how to describe that, but I hope I improved over the years. Okay.
You're getting there.
I'm getting there. Yeah, just distribute that a little bit.
Other than this cake, are you an avid cook at all?
Oh, yes. I like to cook. When you live by yourself, you don't tend to do lots of extravagant kind of things, or at least I don't. So when there's an occasion to do a holiday or some other kind of thing, then I put it together. And I had somebody the other day saying, well, instead of that party, why don't you do it as a potluck and that'll make it easier on you? And I'm going, how do I explain this to you? I mean, the thing is that when I do a party like that, it's a gift. My fun is the doing of it. It's not that I dislike potlucks, but that's not the purpose on that one.
Well, it looks good. The time has come to plop it into the pans. And you've got an enormous oven. Can you fit all of them in the oven?
Yes.
So I see that the pan is not... Oh, the pans are buttered and then lined, right?
Yeah, parchment paper. Oh, yeah, they can all be much closer to this, but down in the corners and everything else. So you've got room to go.
Yep.
You know, I'm trying to kind of smooth it out, so. But I also don't want to overwork it, so.
So there we go, and you've shown me the final product. What is the most special thing to you about making this, or eating this, or sharing this cake?
That it was something that Mom and I started doing, and sitting there and cutting up the fruit and having sticky cherries and dates and everything stuck all the way up your arm, it seemed. And I certainly am very fond of traditions. In fact, I was thinking this morning, and I went and got the Truman Capote book and his childhood making fruitcake with this, as he said, very distant cousin. Just the whole, you know, story about going out and picking the pecans off the ground that had fallen from the trees that had been harvested, and they had no money and all of the kind of things. It's carried a lot of the same feel of the importance of just doing something with people you love.
Chris's holiday fruitcake tradition so closely paralleled Truman Capote's A Christmas Memory. I realize that the common thread between them, the common thread in all traditions we hold dear to our hearts, is love.
The black stove, stoked with coal and firewood, glows like a lighted pumpkin. Egg beaters whirl, spoons spin round in bowls of butter and sugar. Vanilla sweetens the air, ginger spices it, melting, nose-tingling odors saturate the kitchen, suffuse the house, drift out to the world on puffs of chimney smoke.
In four days, our work is done. 31 cakes, dampened with whiskey, bask on the window sills and shelves. Who are they for? Friends?
Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, May your family traditions be as rich and fulfilling and filled with the love that memories make as Chrissa's. I'm Father Ian, and I'm Playing with Food.